It's July 20th, and you're listening to NFA Radio. And here's your host, Matt Baxendale.
Welcome back for another outstanding edition of National Football Authority Radio. Today is July 20th, and I am Matt Baxendale, a.k.a. Bax. I am the host here for National Football Authority Radio. I'd like to thank each and every single one of you for tuning in. Last week was another banner week for NFA Radio. We had hundreds of listeners, including a whole new bunch of people who found us through iTunes. So if you haven't signed up for our feed through iTunes, you need to go there right now. As for today's show, we got a great show coming up for you. The NFL lockout, is it going to be over soon? We're pretty sure. There's a lot of things in flux, so we're going to have to see where that stands. But in the meantime, we got a lot of great college football previews coming out on nationalfootballauthority.com. And as always, we're going to bring on Nate Custer. He's the editor-in-chief for college football for nationalfootballauthority.com. Nate's going to join us because our college football preview for the 2011 season began this week on nationalfootballauthority.com, starting with the Sun Belt Conference and the WAC Conference, and those are two of the smaller conferences out there. The two of the conferences get a little less attention, but you know what? They have great races. Just because you don't know a lot about these teams doesn't mean there's going to be a lot of good football games. And plus, these are the teams you're going to be watching on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night when you're out at the sports bar with your friends. You need to know something about them. On top of that, we're going to keep talking about the biggest topics that are going on in the world of college football this week because Nate's here for our award-winning segment. Well, not yet, but it will be, dang it. Bax and Nate on college football. We're going to be giving you lots of great info. Do you want to stick around for that? But before we get to Nate, you know how we always start every single show here on National Football Authority Radio. Let's go off the top of my head.
Off the top of my head.
All right, let's begin with the National Football League here off the top of my head. And the big subject going on, obviously, is the upcoming end of the lockout. I think everybody and their mother at this point believes that the lockout is going to come to a conclusion one day in the very near future. What looks like we have is the players' union's getting ready to recertify. The owners are ready to vote on this. And then we're going to have a whole week's worth of lawyers crossing T's and dotting I's and all that other boring legal crap that we need to have to make sure this happens. In the end, it looks like the NFL didn't screw it up. They didn't kill the golden goose, and it looks like we're going to get a season. So when the season actually gets ready to go, whenever this deal is signed, we have a collective bargaining agreement, we are going to have an unbelievable feeding frenzy of free agency. Probably 2-3 days after the lockout officially comes to an end is when you're going to see the players hit the market, and things are going to go nuts. Now, everybody's talking about that, but the other thing I don't think a lot of people are talking about is how many trades I think are going to go down almost immediately. Think about it. The players haven't been allowed to have contact with teams for this entire length of lockout. On the other hand, the teams can talk to each other as much as they want. And this was reported actually on NationalFootballAuthority.com about a week and a half ago. Apparently the Eagles and the Cardinals were pretty close 2 weeks ago to coming to an agreement to trade Kevin Cobb to the Cardinals in return for a draft pick and a defensive starter. Well, word came out on Tuesday that appears to be the case. So, folks, you heard it here first. Apparently, the starter in question is cornerback Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. He's an excellent corner, and believe us, that's one of the places that Philadelphia really needs help. So, you know, the trade makes good sense from an Eagles perspective. Backup quarterback for a starting cornerback, which is a very good trade for them. And on the flip side, it's also very good for the Cardinals. Look, they need a quarterback. They need somebody who can get the ball to people left and right. And the fact that they didn't take a quarterback high in the draft this year pretty much screamed to the high heavens that they're going to get a quarterback. So that's one of the first things I think you're going to see go down. You're going to see Cobb heading to the Cardinals as soon as it's legally allowed. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on. There's going to be a lot of trades.
Off the top of my head.
You know, with a lockout ending, you'd figure we would stop talking about off-the-field stuff and start talking about, you know, what's going to happen on the field. We haven't had one person talk about who's going to win the Super Bowl this year because, frankly, we don't know what these teams are going to look like. And at the same time, let's talk about a team that's in the Super Bowl last year. And we're talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers. And unfortunately, they're going to be in the news for more off-the-field stuff, regardless of what happens with the lockout. And of course, I'm talking about the unbelievably foolish comments from linebacker James Harrison. Now, at this point, everybody's heard James Harrison calling Roger Goodell all kinds of names, saying he wouldn't piss on him if he was on fire and put him out. I mean, to me, That's not so shocking. All right, look, the guy hates Goodell. Goodell fined him more than any other player in the history of the NFL for these contact plays because James Harrison plays football hard and James Harrison hits people. Frankly, I understand why James Harrison can't stand Roger Goodell, and that shouldn't have been surprising to people. Did he use words that are offensive to some people? Sure. But you know what? In a politically correct society, does anybody really surprise that an alpha male like James Harrison uses words to denigrate other people? I mean, that's what he does. He beats people up for a living. Think about it. Now, I'm more concerned, though, about his comments about two of his teammates from the Super Bowl. He said that running back Rashard Mendenhall was a, quote, a fumble machine, because he had one fumble in the fourth quarter. And he said Ben Roethlisberger, the starting quarterback who's won two Super Bowls and went to a third last year, to, quote, stop trying to act like Peyton Manning. All right, James, look, let's be level here, man. That is patently ridiculous. All right, first of all, if you want Ben to act like Peyton Manning, they might as well take away two Super Bowl appearances because he's been to three Super Bowls. Manning's been to one. He's won two. Manning's only won one. Right now, Ben Roethlisberger is a more accomplished quarterback in terms of championships than Peyton Manning. So you need to get your head checked on that one, pal, because he's the guy who also put two Super Bowl rings on your finger. As for Rashard Mendenhall, look, the guy had trouble fumbling the ball at various points in his career. All right, but that fumble in the fourth quarter against the Packers was a good defensive play. That ball was protected well by him, and you know what? It popped out. It happened. Unfortunately, the Steelers lost the game, James. It stinks. But you know what? That didn't cost them the game. It did absolutely not cost them the game. First of all, if the Steelers hadn't given up extra points in the fourth quarter, they would have been in better position and have more time to drive down the field. Second of all, here's the other thing you have to remember, is that the Steelers got the ball back at the end of the game, and for some reason they couldn't move it. You know what? Green Bay had a great defense, too. All right, so don't blame your teammates, because that comes across as petty, and it comes across as somebody who's still vindictive about something that ended a long time ago. Focus on this season, because you know what? The Steelers make one or two smart moves. They're a team that is immediately contending for the Super Bowl, like usual. So, James Harrison, shame on you.
Off the top of my head.
All right, let's move on from the professional ranks to the ranks where, well, they're not technically professional, even though they probably should be paid. I'm talking about college football. One of the biggest stories this week in college football came from the city of Atlanta from an unlikely source to be hit with NCAA sanctions. I'm talking about the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets? I know, as crazy as it sounds to hear Georgia Tech and NCAA football violations in the same sentence, that's what happened this week. The Techies, who were more considered to be an academic school than anything else, you know, this week they were hit with major sanctions from the NCAA. First of all, they're hit with 4 years of probation. They were also forced to vacate the 2009 ACC championship. Now, why did this happen, might you ask? Well, during that championship run, the NCAA alerted the Georgia Tech Brain Trust that there was a player on their team, by the way, who they say is unnamed, but everybody knows it's Demaryius Thomas, the wide receiver now with the Denver Broncos. Apparently, this player received some illegal benefits, and the NCAA had some serious concerns about his eligibility. Now, that's kind of a problem, wouldn't you think? Well, Georgia Tech, in the pursuit of their first ACC title in a very long time, decided to play him in spite of the NCAA's concerns about his eligibility. That's the first no-no that happened there. Look, I don't care if it was $300 worth of stuff, which he purportedly took, or $3,000 worth of stuff. The rule of the law is that he took extra benefits. And Georgia Tech would have been really smart to say, okay, he took extra benefits, they're going to suspend him one game, and he's going to repay him. That's it. No big deal. But nope, Georgia Tech had their game against Georgia coming up, and let's face it, Demaryius Thomas was their entire passing offense that year. So Georgia Tech, deciding that they wanted to win at all costs, cost themselves this ACC title, and it was stripped away from them. Now, here's the interesting part about the entire Georgia Tech situation. The athletic director actually warned the players and the head coach at the NCAA was coming to talk to him, and the NCAA explicitly said, do not talk to them. Now, to me, that's a really big issue because you're supposed to cooperate 100% with the NCAA, and Georgia Tech clearly wasn't in the situation. In fact, if anything, they were undermining an investigation, and that's why they got hit with so many years of probation, and that's why they had to vacate their ACC championship. But you know what? In a lot of respects, you would have thought that this would have been more severe. In fact, if you compare this to some other cases, which we'll get to in a minute, to me, it seems like Georgia Tech almost got off easy here. Was athletic director Dan Radakovich fired? No. Was head coach Paul Johnson fired? No. Was Georgia Tech hit with a bowl ban? No. Was Georgia Tech docked a single scholarship? No, not at all. So pretty much all they were told was, we're going to slap you on the wrist with some probation, And that's it, pretty much. Oh, let's take away your title that everybody remembers you winning, and let's pretend you didn't play in the Orange Bowl that year. Yeah. So pretty much what happened here is the NCAA looked at a situation where there was a cover-up from some higher-ups in the athletic department and said, okay, well, we're going to give you probation, and that's it. Well, okay, fine. If that's how the NCAA wants to rule, then this sets an incredible precedent.
Off the top of my head.
Oh, and that precedent belongs to a very happy Ohio State University. That's right. Barely a month before the Ohio State University has to appear before the NCAA Committee on Infractions, they set an incredible precedent that not only reinforces those of us, me and Stuart Mandel, who are the only two who have been saying this, that Ohio State's not going to get hit with a bull bin. They're not going to get hit with big sanctions. They're not going to get hit with anything major beyond what they've already self-sanctioned. Because, you know what? Georgia Tech's situation may have actually been worse than what happened at Ohio State. Look, Jim Tressel was aware of a possible ineligible situation with his players, and essentially what happened was his players told them they weren't ineligible, and Tressel said, okay, whatever, I believe you. Okay, now that's enough to get him in trouble with the NCAA, right? Well, what happens when the NCAA goes to your school like Georgia Tech and says, hey, there's an eligibility issue, you might want to hold him out, and they don't? Let's compare Georgia Tech to Ohio State a little more here. Ohio State was one person. It was Jim Tressel. Jim Tressel was the only person who was involved in this. All the research, all the investigation that was done, it was Tressel and Tressel alone. Well, at Georgia Tech, you had multiple people in the athletic department trying to get in the way of an NCAA investigation. To me, that's an institution-wide issue. You could have easily slapped them a lack of institutional control for this because they directly went against the NCAA. Meanwhile, like I said, at Ohio State, it was only one person. And oh, by the way, both times there were infractions at OSU, the NCAA didn't have to come to them. OSU self-reported. So you know what this looks like to me? It looks to me like less than a month, Ohio State has to go to plea their case to the NCAA. They have a precedent in place saying somebody in the athletic department knew about an ineligible player, and that player still played, and there was no bowl ban. There were no scholarship reductions. There was pretty much nothing beyond probation. There was nothing beyond a vacated title. Well then, that's exactly what Ohio State did to themselves. In fact, it feels like Ohio State sanctioned themselves far too heavily because Jim Tressel lost his job. And let's face it, Jim Tressel would have been in a lot of trouble. But after seeing Paul Johnson and Dan Radakovich skirt away on this one scot-free, after seeing LSU, who also got hit with major violations this week for the exact same clause that got Tressel in trouble, 10.1, skirt away, and they only had to fire an assistant coach. Well, then you know what? Maybe Jim Tressel should be the coach for Ohio State next year, and this year can be treated as a suspension, because I kind of think he got a raw deal. You might not like it, but you know what, folks? At this point in time, I will be beyond stunned if Ohio State gets decked with anything beyond they've already sanctioned themselves. All right, well, that's off the top of my head. And I feel so much better getting all that off my chest. All right, coming up next, we're bringing on our college football editor-in-chief. He is Nate Custer. He's coming on. We're going to be talking about the Sun Belt. We're going to be talking about the WAC. We're going to be talking about all things college football. Coming up on our soon-to-be award-winning segment, Bax and Nate on College Football. Keep it locked here, National Football Authority Radio. And it's time right now for the award-winning, well, soon-to-be award-winning segment, Bax and Nate on College Football. And we're joined here now by Nate Custer. Nate, welcome. Welcome to our soon-to-be trophy championship show. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How soon is this award going to come our way? I'm ready. I've got a place on my mantle. Let's go.
Yeah, a place on the mantle. I hope it comes with a cash prize. That'd be great.
Yeah, we can always use some more cash in our pockets.
That's for sure. Yeah, the NFA radio celebratory party. There we go. But anyways, you know, it's a big week in college football for us at National Football Authority. We got two great conference previews coming out. We got the Sun Belt that came out on Monday. And then tomorrow we have the WAC conference coming out. And I know the people out in Boise are excited about that, even though Boise State's not in the WAC anymore. You know, that's one of the conferences that's going to be very interesting to talk about this year. But we'll get to that in a second. How about we start with the Sun Belt? Let's talk about the conference that probably is the least recognizable of the 11 conferences in all of college football, and I think you can agree with me. The overwhelming trend
with the Sun Belt has been the Troy Trojans dominating at the top.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Troy's been the team to beat for a while now. I mean, certainly the Mean Green have not been that way. So, you know, I remember when Idaho was back playing in the Sun Belt, one of the most oddly matched up pairings I've ever seen in college football. But, yeah, Troy's the team to beat. So, but you've been previewing all these teams, and you're saying there's another team to be watching out for now.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, Troy the last 5 years has won at least a share of the Sun Belt Championship. They haven't won all five of those outright. Well, last year, Troy technically didn't win the Sun Belt. See, they tied with Florida International, but Florida International beat them head-to-head. So Florida International got the automatic bowl bid for the Sun Belt. And I tell you right now, Florida International looks like a real team to be reckoned with this year. Not a lot of people were aware of this, but last year at the start of the season, Florida International played Rutgers, Texas A&M, Maryland, and Pitt in four straight weeks. And in three of those four games, they scared the living daylights out of those top BCS conference teams. And they bring back 15 starters this year. They were the champions last year, and their coach, Mario Cristobal, in my opinion, Florida International fans don't want to hear this, but that guy's a rising star. He's going to take Florida International to another great season this year, and somebody is going to go after him. I love Florida International's team to beat this year. And one more benefit, they host Troy this year on a Tuesday night. Home field advantage in the most important game in the conference.
Well, and it's fun to watch what Cristobal's been able to do going into his fifth season here. I mean, it's been... Florida International is one of those teams that used to be the joke that you put on your schedule, but all of a sudden, they're looking like they're the real deal. And so, you know, you mentioned that non-conference schedule that they played last year, and that was a rough one. I mean, anytime you put Texas A&M on your schedule as a non-AQ school, you've got to be at least a little bit nervous. And I like this offense. I think they've got that hunger that they're looking for. So it's going to be very fun to watch this next season.
And don't forget, they have a guy by the name of T.Y. Hilton, who was the Sun Belt Player of the Year last year. He's a two-time first-team Sun Belt member. This guy, he's a future NFL player, plain and simple. He's a playmaker. He might be the fastest guy in the conference. I tell you right now, as much as I like this team, having a guy like Hilton as a playmaker is an utter luxury. He's the kind of guy that any team in a BCS conference would love to have. He's that talented. So Florida National is my pick in this conference. I think Troy's going to make some noise, and I also like Arkansas State to be a contender, but the rest of the conference, it's not so good right now. The Sun Belt's still trying to gain some momentum and respect, but it's kind of a bottom-of-the-barrel league still.
Well, and I'd like to see something happen in North Texas because I know they've had success in years past. It's been a while. They've got this new stadium. So I would like to see what happens out there. And, you know, the folks just north of Dallas might have a new destination to go to in the years to come. I'd like to see if they can make a little noise. But right now, I mean, I think you've nailed it. Florida National's a team to watch. And like you mentioned, T.Y. Hilton, I mean, the guy's not a bad kick returner either. And then Troy, well, they are Troy. You know, we know how that works out.
Just a little more on North Texas here. They made what I thought was a really sneaky good hire. They brought in Dan McCartney. And, you know, this Dan McCartney was the guy who was the coach at Iowa State. He actually took Iowa State to a bunch of bowl games. Let's remember, this is Iowa State. They're never very good. And then when they decided to get rid of him, he went straight to Florida and was the assistant head coach at the Gators while they were winning national championship. So this guy knows what it takes. And on top of that, he's a noted D-line coach. So it wouldn't surprise me if a North Texas defense, let's face it, has not been very good. In fact, a couple years ago, they were averaging 45 points against and 47 points against. I'd be surprised if they started playing well. North Texas is a team that, you know, they have some talent. And in past years, I said this in the preview on NationalFootballAuthority.com, I've been bamboozled by them. I've picked them to have 4 and 5 wins. They have the talent, and then they don't do anything with it. Now, their former coach was Todd Dodge. He was a high school football coach until he got the job at North Texas, clearly in over his head. McCarthy could easily turn this team around. And while I don't think North Texas is going bowling this year, because their non-conference schedule, let me read this off to you, is Houston, who's going to be extremely good, at Alabama, who's a national championship team, Indiana, who's going to be a lot better this year with Kevin Wilson in charge, and then at Tulsa. So if North Texas had a more reasonable non-conference schedule, they might be a bowl-caliber team. Wouldn't surprise me if North Texas went 500 in the league this year, though. Not at all.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to watch how that all shakes down, just because that's a team that, you know, they've had a hunger, but they've just not had the tools to do anything. And so if they can actually make some bit of a noise this year, the future outlook looks really good. And I won't lie, there's been a couple years in the last few years where I've thought that North Texas had the ability to make some noise in the conference, but I've been fooled by them.
Well, I'm glad it wasn't just me. That makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go from a team in North Texas which may have a bright future to a conference where the future is very, very questionable. Let's go to the WAC. Now, the WAC lost Boise State this year. Next year, they're losing Fresno State, they're losing Hawaii, and they're losing Nevada. Those are four of their Cadillac programs. But that's the future. This fall, there might not be a more wide-open league in the country. What's your take on the WAC? Because you're the one in charge of writing this. You're out west. You know these teams better than almost anybody I know. What are we supposed to look for in the WAC this year?
Well, first I want to touch on the subject that, you know, you're talking about losing Nevada and Hawaii and Fresno State. Are you not excited about the additions of UT Arlington, the Mavericks? Are you not excited about Texas State? I mean, sure, you lose Fresno State and Hawaii, but at least you've got the Mavericks and the Roadrunners. Come on.
Hey, you know what? They need more Texas flair in the WAC. It'll help them.
Yeah,
they can get,
yeah.
It helps recruiting, right?
they keep adding schools that don't have football programs. The best thing going right now for UT Arlington is that the students voted a few years back that they want to add football back. And the president said, we're willing to consider that. That's as far as it's gone. And when Carl Benson, the commissioner of the WAC, talked about this last week, I actually had him on my radio show this last week. We carried it live when he made the announcement. Like, they hope to add a football program. That's as good as it gets right now for the WAC for the future. So this is going to be a fun time for the WAC because it's a last chance you get to see some of the upper-tier teams that have been competitors in this league. This next year is it. Already Boise State is gone. The brass ring is up for grabs. For the first time in the last decade, it's open to see who's going to be the conference champion. And so I enjoy watching the Nevadas and the Hawaiis because I love those offenses. Fresno State, I am a big, big Pat Hill fan. One of my favorite coaches of all time to interview. The guy tells you exactly what he thinks. He picks these schedules that, you know, it's so frustrating because I love his attitude, you know, anytime, anywhere, any place, like Florida State used to do back in the old days, to get that kind of credibility. Problem is, the execution hasn't been that successful. A team that had a lot of chances to really make a big noise, things just haven't panned out that well, and I would like to see Pat Hill kind of scale back that attitude to some degree and offer his teams a little more confidence in the non-conference schedule. This next year is going to be tough for Fresno State. They're doing themselves no favors. So they do have six home games, but their non-conference schedule is not favorable to them.
You know, I agree with you. I think Fresno State has challenged themselves more consistently out of conference than almost any other team in the entire country. Frankly, I would love to have seen this attitude from Boise State the last decade because we'd have a very definitive answer on just how good the Broncos are, and no one could argue it. But, you know, Fresno State, like you said, their schedule's tough this year. Out of conference, they got to play Boise State. They got to go to Nebraska. They got to play Cal. And they got to play Mississippi. I mean, those are four very, very tough games. And I know Fresno State's are pumped up about David Carr's little brother taking over the offense and leading them to a great deal of success. But in my eyes, while the league is wide open, Fresno State's schedule will not help them, plain and simple.
Well, and you said it there. You've got David Carr's little brother there, Derek, and Derek is a new quarterback. He's a young quarterback. He's going to have some issues with those very tough games right in the very beginning. You know, that's a rough time. I mean, when you have a brand-new quarterback who is as young as he is, they're a bit of a ballerina in the beginning. You need to hold their hand somewhat, and the schedule that Pat Hill has in place for his team, that's going to be rough goings. I mean, he's going to be going to the school of hard knocks on this one. He's not getting to ease his way into things. It's rough right off the bat. So the team that I really like, and I know that you're with me on this one, I enjoy watching what's happening up there in Moscow in Idaho. The Vandals, one of my all-time favorite coaches, and love him or hate him, I love Rob Akey because there's not a guy out there who is just more fiery than he is. I mean, when he celebrates on the sidelines, you got to be careful. I was talking actually with Jason Gesser, former Washington State great quarterback from the early 2000s when we had those nice seasons at my alma mater back in the early 2000s. He's now the running backs coach at University of Idaho. He knows Rob Akey quite well. And so I asked him, are you going to have to put on the old rib protector when you celebrate with Coach Akey? Because the guy loves to hit you when he's excited. So, but anyway, I think he's got some great talent coming his way. I love this transfer from Arizona State. It's a good situation for them at running back with Ryan Bass. And so they have a new quarterback, Brian Reeder, but he's had some success on his own before. So it's not as if he's never run with the first team. I will say that in spring, and I was talking to one of my friends up on the Palouse about this, Brian Reeder, their senior, who is now taking over for Nathan Enderle, who's departed for the NFL, he looked kind of like he was not as confident as he could be in spring practice, but his receivers seem to have a lot of respect for him. And Justin Veltung is a receiver that we'll probably hear his name called quite a bit. Junior, looking very strong, even though they've lost a couple of their main receivers who were the second-team all-WAC guys. They didn't have anyone on the first team, but I think they're going to be doing very well. And I think they have a chance to at least finish second in the WAC this year.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And honestly, with how wide open the WAC is, it wouldn't surprise me if Idaho snuck up and ended up being a co-champion with somebody. I mean, it's such a wide open league that there's anybody can win this. You know, you're talking about Reeder this year. I think having Bass in the running game is a huge addition. I mean, this is a guy top five tailback coming out of high school. And on top of that, their offensive line returns three senior starters. That's going to help because you've got to protect a new quarterback, plain and simple.
And Matt Cleveland is going to be the anchor of that line at left tackle. I mean, that guy is the strength of that line. So it will be a lot of fun to watch to see how this comes out. And the line was a little beat up, a little dinged up in spring ball, but I think they're going to have some success up there. Isn't it strange to be talking about Idaho as a chance to be at least a co-conference champion? Idaho!
Hey, you know what? They've won 14 games in the last two seasons. You can't turn your nose up in them anymore. And I've been as guilty as anybody in this path. I derisively called the Kibbe Dome that it looked like a roller rink to me. But you know what? They get the job done, plain and simple. I mean, the last 2 years, Akey has turned this team around. Akey's another one of those coaches that I really think has a bright future, whether it's at Idaho, whether it's somewhere else. He's a guy who, if he leads Idaho to the WAC championship this year, they'll love him forever at Idaho. And he could easily go on to bigger and better things in the future, no question about it. But talking about the championship picture here, I mean, we haven't mentioned probably the two teams people know best inside the WAC. And we're talking about Nevada, who actually won the league last year, even with Boise State in it, which I called for the record. And we're talking about the Hawaii Warriors. I mean, those are the two probably biggest named schools left in the WAC. Do you think one of those two schools is going to be the team to really watch this year in the championship race?
Well, it's funny, you know, Nevada has been one of those teams that, you know, has been a lot of fun to watch over the last couple of years. It's always the slugfest between Nevada and Boise State for the conference championship. And last year was the first time that we really saw them be successful in toppling the champions. They still had to share the championship because of how everything broke down with them losing to Hawaii and Boise State having beaten Hawaii. But Hawaii has a fantastic offense. That's never going to change. But who do they have coming back? It's just Royce Pollard. I mean, you look at their quarterback, Bryant Moniz. He's awesome. How he ever escaped Pat Hill's attention in the Fresno area is beyond me. But that JC transfer worked out very, very well for Hawaii. And the guy loves to throw the rock, and he does it exceptionally well. But they're going to have some issues. And Hawaii's defense is just so suspect coming up this next season. I still like Nevada to win the conference. But I do think that there's going to be some slip-ups along the way. I don't think anyone's going to go perfect in conference this year. I mean, the days of Boise State going perfect over and over again, there's really no one else that can do that like they have. If anyone can do it, perhaps it's Nevada this year. But again, I think even Nevada's going to slip up along the way.
Oh, absolutely. And we're talking about a league where there's only going to be seven conference games now because of the size of the league. It wouldn't surprise me if 5-2 was enough to win this conference, plain and simple. I mean, Nevada's a good team. Yeah, and Nevada's got a good team, but let's face it, the last 4 years they were so exceptional because of Colin Kaepernick and because of the great running game around him. I mean, Vaitua also graduated. He was a guy who had 1,600 yards on the ground for them last year.
Tala was incredible. Yeah, he absolutely was. And, you know, they're missing some of those teeth. And like you mentioned, Kaepernick and Vaitua, those guys were so amazingly beneficial for that pistol offense. I've heard along the way from some folks from the Nevada area in Reno that this next kid coming up is someone to watch for. So, again, you have another younger quarterback coming in. But at the same time, I think that Nevada still has enough teeth to make things exciting and really jump into the mix here. And their defense, I mean, you lose some guys like their defensive end Dante Moak, but they're reloading. Mm-hmm. And also, I can tell you that 2 years ago when I was interviewing their coach, Chris Ault, he was telling me that, you know, those days of the just terrible defense and just giving up pass after pass, that's been an area of emphasis. Is it where it wants to be? Absolutely not. Ault will never be happy with that defense, but it has been an area of emphasis. I think they've still got enough of the important players in place to make a difference, and I really love some of the wide receivers they've got to work with out there. So Matthews is just he's got so much potential, and Rashard Matthews is a guy that Boise State knows all too well from last year's game because he was a difference maker in that win for Nevada.
And if you're talking about difference makers on Nevada, you can't forget about Brett Roy. That guy had 8 sacks last year. And yeah, he was playing opposite of Mock, but that guy's also a playmaker in his own right. All right, well, we've talked about all these teams here in the WAC. We've talked about the teams that are remaining of the big names. Your pick is going to be which team? You said Nevada. Is that going to be who you're going with as your final choice?
I think Nevada's probably going to be the way I have to go with this one, and I will not be surprised if Idaho at least finishes second in this conference. Maybe they get a chance to go a tie or win the conference outright, but I think that Idaho will be number two. They may be in a tie with Hawaii is what I think. So that's how I'm calling it. I do think there's going to be, you know, La Tech is a team that you can't ever count out. They have a lot of talent in that area. It's a matter of it panning out. They tend to take a lot of gambles, and so La Tech will be one of those teams where you just don't know what to expect, and with the travel schedule like that, that's where it really takes a toll for teams like Hawaii and La Tech, because that conference is so wide. La Tech has to be very, very happy about the fact that they have more Texas schools coming online. But let's face it, if the Conference USA higher-ups decide that they would like to invite Louisiana Tech, they are gone. They will go.
Yep.
They will not stick around. They are just waiting for the chance to join Conference USA. But in the meantime, they're stuck with the schedule, and they just get chewed up by that travel schedule. So I just can never sit tight. As good as La Tech may look, I can't ever pick them to win the conference because that travel schedule is too much for a team like them.
I agree with you. And Louisiana Tech and Hawaii is the furthest trip in college football between conference rivals. So you know what? I can't take Hawaii for that same reason either. I know Hawaii's going to have a great offense, but we're talking about Moniz. He has one offensive lineman returning. There's only three starters in the entire offense back, and that to me I think is the decisive factor. I'm agreeing with you. We're going to go with Nevada. You are our WAC expert. I'm deferring to you, Mr. Custer. So Nevada is officially the NationalFootballAuthority.com choice to win the WAC. That preview comes out this Thursday. All the teams in the conference are done with great detail, with great care. We're just as interested in how well that Idaho does, just as interested as how well as Nevada does, compared to, well, some of the bottom teams, such as Utah State, New Mexico State. You're going to get the same love and care, so you want to check them all out. All right, Nate, well, one last thing here before we wrap things up. I wanted to talk to you about the sanctions that have been coming down this week, it seems, left and right in college football. And a lot of people are talking about it, but you have the situation with Georgia Tech, and you have a situation with LSU, both of whom were hit with major violations, but not what I would really consider major sanctions. What's your take on both of those two situations?
Well, I understand what's involved. You look at some of the things with the stuff that just got handed down on Tuesday with LSU, and they, you know, they put their recommendations for what they were willing to do for punishments or, you know, sanctions, self-imposed sanctions. However, the NCAA decided not to just take their recommendation. They actually added to it. So you're looking at the loss of a couple scholarships. You're looking at probation for a year. But other than that, it's just a light slap on the wrist. And what that all centered around was a player that they'd, you know, recruited. The fact that the kid got to stay at a female student worker's apartment for a couple of days, some phone calls, but other than that, you know, it wasn't too major. I mean, nothing that's going to keep Les Miles from chewing on some grass on the field. He's still going to be not have too much of an upset stomach. It's basically a light slap on the wrist. And then you look at what's happened, you know, at other schools with Georgia Tech as well, and all this stuff going on. You've got to be feeling really good for your Ohio State Buckeyes these days, and looking at any sort of a bowl ban being potentially there, doesn't sound like it's going to happen. They won't do it to these guys. They're not going to do it to Ohio State.
That's what I told you last week. You know, the Georgia
Tech case,
right. I wrote an article about this actually on NationalFootballAuthority.com saying that the Georgia Tech case could not have come at a better time for Ohio State. Less than a month before Ohio State goes before the Committee of Infractions, they make a ruling about a school who knowingly played players that may have been ineligible. And it wasn't just one person who knew. It was a bunch of higher-ups in the athletic department who actually knew about this. So this isn't just right. like Ohio State where it's isolated with Jim Tressel. So you know what? As an Ohio State fan, I'm jumping for joy. If the NCAA tells Ohio State you get 4 years of probation, well, whoop-de-freaking-do. This is just another confirmation, in my opinion, that Ohio State's not going to get a bowl ban. And maybe they'll get some small scholarships. I can see them taking two or three away, maybe even up to five per year just because there's five guys who get in trouble with the tattoo gate. They're not getting a bowl ban. And Georgia Tech sets a perfect precedent for the Buckeyes. You're going to see Ohio State in a bowl game somewhere this fall. And by the way, this is a really mad team. It might be a really good bowl game they're going to play in.
Well, it's going to be fun. You see what Luke Fickell is bringing to the table. You see the hire with Mike Vrabel. I mean, that's a passionate guy right there. So I think Ohio State, we probably will be seeing them in some bowl games. I do think that it's warranted potentially for some scholarships to be lost. I'm not thinking anything major, but let's be fair. There were some guys that were playing that shouldn't have been playing. Whether nobody else knew or not, Tressel knew, and that affects the whole team. And Tressel was allowed to run that team, and they put their faith in him to run that team. So while they may not have known what's going on, they still have to be held accountable for at least some of what happened.
And they're going to be held accountable, and I agree with you. And you know what? Like I said last week, I think that the self-sanctions they gave out are going to be held up, and the NCAA might give them a tiny bit here. But in the end, it's still a loss for Ohio State. They lost a coach who, over 10 years, won 100-plus games, a national championship, 8 Big Ten titles. I mean, this guy is one of the elite coaches we'll ever see in the game of college
football. He was a good coach. No question.
For the Buckeyes. But all right, Nate. Well, I know we're running short on time here, so I am going to let you go. Mr. Custer, you are in charge of National Football Authority Radio next week, so please, please treat our baby with great care. And thanks for coming on here with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, Bax. I appreciate it, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, and that's Bax and Nate on college football. Keep it locked here. We got some more coming up for you on National Football Authority Radio.
You're listening to National Football Authority Radio. NationalFootballAuthority.com, the shooting star of football coverage on the internet.
Well, we're coming up towards the end of the show here on National Football Authority Radio on July 20th, 2011. Before we go, I got one final thing I need to get off my chest, and I'm talking about the tailback, well, maybe former tailback for the USC Trojans, a kid by the name of Mark Tyler. Now, if you're not aware of this story, TMZ caught up with him while he was partying in Los Angeles this past weekend and asked him, Mark, where do you make more money? Do you make more money at USC or in the NFL? And his immediate response was, USC, they bacon bread. Wow, I cannot believe how stupid that was. Sure, the kid looked like he was drunk and joking, but still, you don't joke about that when you're at a school that is on probation in the midst of crippling sanctions and a two-year bowl ban. Why would you ever say that? To me, this is the height of stupidity. Now, the kid got suspended for the first game against Minnesota. He's indefinitely suspended from team activities. And I fully understand why USC did this. They don't need to act like they're laughing about any more NCAA issues, especially after their old athletic director, Mike Garrett, went out and said, well, the reason we got hit was because they're all jealous they're not Trojans. Yeah, USC doesn't need that. It's just another bad bang on their image of a school right now that cannot afford it. With Lane Kiffin in charge, with major sanctions, that is unbelievably stupid that Tyler said that. All right, well, I'm not going to end the show on a down note. I'm going to end the show on an up note. Today is my little sister Sarah's 25th birthday. I'd like to wish Blondie a happy birthday. I love you, little sister, and I hope you have a great day. Alrighty, well now, that's officially the final word. And that's all the time we've got here on National Football Authority Radio. But next week, we are going to keep continuing with all the great football coverage we're bringing you. We're going to be doing plenty more NFL discussion. Hopefully the lockout will be over. We got Nate Custer running the show next week. I'm going to be on for Bax and Nate on college football. Don't worry about that. But we're going to let Nate take over the show next week. Because let's face it, Nate is a professional. And he'll probably steal the show, and I'm going to get Wally pipped. I'm just kidding. So I'd like to thank Nate for coming on and doing Bax and Nate on college football. Everybody needs to go to NationalFootballAuthority.com and check out our Sun Belt preview. Check out our WAC preview. We got plenty more coming out from now all the way until the start of college football season. We also got a ton of great NFL coverage. Like I said earlier, the very first place to report Kevin Cobb heading from the Eagles down to the Cardinals involving a defensive starter, NationalFootballAuthority.com. So until next week, enjoy the site, enjoy the show, and we will see you!
Watch out!